Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program Number 664, Fun with Science, Part 6. We are going to pick up right where we left off at the end of Side 1. We were talking about the international eugenics movement, a mainstream intellectual and scientific, or some would say pseudoscientific, movement that aimed at engineering human society in such a way as to actively discourage the production of people who were deemed to be inferior, that is, people deemed to be of inferior intellect, inferior racial or religious background, people with disabilities of one sort or another, and to enhance the production of people who were considered to be superior. Of course, one of the most obvious examples of applied eugenics were the Nazi racial laws under which their extermination programs were conducted. Those racial laws grew out of the international eugenics movement, which in turn was very, very well established throughout Western society, including and especially here in the United States. As mentioned in Side 1, the first of the Nazi racial laws, the Law for the Protection of German Blood and Honor, was basically a German adaptation of the Model Eugenic Sterilization Law crafted by Paul Popenoe, a prominent American eugenicist, and enacted in California, a strange place in the western United States that some people may have heard of. I think I've heard of it myself, actually. And in turn, one should understand that the Nazi racial horrors, their war crimes, well, not all of their war crimes, but their racial excesses and the crimes that grew out of those, were not some sort of freak occurrence, but were a logical and insidious development or advancement of eugenics thinking. Now, in Side 1, we took a look at a town in Brazil that appears to have been a focal point of Nazi war criminal Josef Mengele's work on twins. He appears to have carried on his work on twins and successfully propagated a number of pairs of identical twins in this Brazilian town, many of them with blonde hair and blue eyes. And what we're going to do in this portion of the program is to take a look not only at the development or a significant development in eugenics thinking, but we're going to take a look at Mengele's work at Auschwitz and how that in turn was inextricably linked with eugenics research at a branch or a subgroup at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. And in turn, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, one of the most prestigious German academic institutions, was heavily capitalized, and their eugenics research was heavily capitalized by the Rockefeller Foundation. We're going to rely for much of the discussion on Side 2. And by the way, for background on eugenics thinking, there are a number of programs available, and they're all available for download for free on the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Miscellaneous archive shows M12 and M60. A more recent work on eugenics was FTR Program 534, in which we took a look at the peak oil movement or the peak oil theory and how they are advocating a rather open eugenics program that they deem to be necessary because we're running out of oil. And as I've discussed in past programs on peak oil, it basically is a Nazi outfit, although many of the people who have gone along with it are not Nazis by any stretch of the imagination, but its foundation is Nazi. We're going to be relying for much of the material inside two of this program from a book called The War Against the Weak, subtitled Eugenics and America's Campaign to Create a Master Race. It's authored by Edwin Black, and it is published in hardcover by Four Walls, Eight Windows Press. And what we're going to begin with is an examination of how the Rockefeller Foundation helped to capitalize not only the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, but to capitalize eugenics research at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute well into the Nazi regime. By the late 1930s, when the truly ripe nature of the Nazi regime was becoming difficult to conceal, American eugenicists and their funding conduits backed off of their support for the Nazis. But in fact, the Rockefeller Foundation played a very, very significant role in the capitalization of Nazi eugenics and the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute in particular. Reading now from The War Against the Weak by Edwin Black. Rockefeller money continued to stream across the Atlantic. This was, by the way, after the ascension of Adolf Hitler in 1933. Beginning again, Rockefeller money continued to stream across the Atlantic. The 1933 financial books of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Anthropology, Human Heredity, and Eugenics reflected the Foundation's continuing impact. The 1933 financial books of the Institute for Anthropology, Human Heredity, and Eugenics, that, by the way, of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, reflected the Foundation's continuing impact. Page 4 of the balance sheet. Rockefeller paid for a research assistant, a statistician, two secretaries, and a gardener. Page 6 of the balance sheet. Rockefeller paid clerical costs associated with research on twins. Ironically, while Fisher remained in charge of the Institute for Anthropology, Human Heredity, and Eugenics, he was being replaced at the Society for Racial Hygiene. He had taken over the Society for Plutz, but in 1933, Nazis overran the Society and Fisher was considered too moderate. He was replaced by Ernst Rudin, then the president of the IFEO. Unlike eugenic leaders associated with Eugenical News, Rockefeller officials did not propagandize for Nazism, nor did they approve of the Reich's virulent repression. The Rockefeller Foundation's agenda was strictly biological to the exclusion of politics. The Foundation wanted to discover the carriers of defective blood, even if it meant funding Nazi-controlled institutions. Moreover, Rockefeller executives knew their money carried power, and they used it to ensure that the most talented scientists continued at the various Kaiser Wilhelm Institutes, frequently shielding them from periodic Nazi purges. For example, in early June of 1933, one of the Foundation's favorite researchers, Oscar Vogt, V-O-G-T, head of the Institute for Brain Research, was threatened with removal because of his perceived socialist leanings. Rockefeller mobilized. On June 7, 1933, H.J. Mueller, a University of Texas geneticist working at the Institute for Brain Research, alerted Robert A. Lambert in Rockefeller's Paris office. Just days before, Lambert had toured various Berlin research facilities. In his letter, Mueller warned Lambert, quote, "If this director loses his position, it is a foregone conclusion and common knowledge that the head of the genetics department and all other non-Germans, as well as Germans closely associated with the director, will also lose their positions. I realize that the Rockefeller Foundation must preserve its neutrality so far as matters of politics are concerned. On the other hand, it wishes to have its funds used so that they can best serve the furtherance of truly scientific work." Mueller asked Lambert and other Rockefeller executives to consider, quote, "the making of a statement, not necessarily a public one, but it may be one expressed in a letter to some responsible person, such as, for example, physicist Dr. Max Planck, which could then be shown to the authorities concerned so that they could be informed of your policy in advance. Some statement similar to that which you made orally to the director of the Institute here would suffice, namely that the Rockefeller Foundation would not feel justified from the point of view of the furtherance of scientific work in sending additional funds to the support of institutions in Germany, one, if on grounds other than their scientific work, worthy scientists not engaged in political activity are dismissed from institutions which have been founded or supported in part by funds of the Rockefeller Foundation, or two, if persons who have been assigned stipends from the foundation are dismissed from such institutions." Oscar Vogt was not removed. He remained at his post until well after his Rockefeller funding had run its course. With each passing day, the world was flooded with more Jewish refugees, more noisy anti-Nazi boycotts, and protest marches against any scientific or commercial exchanges with Germany, more public demands to isolate the Reich, and more shocking headlines documenting Nazi atrocities and anti-Jewish legislation. Still, none of this gave pause to America's eugenicists. Correspondence on joint research flowed freely across the Atlantic. American eugenicists and their many organizations and committees from New York to California and all points in between maintained and multiplied their contacts with every echelon of official and semi-official German eugenics. As the Reich descended into greater depths of depraved mistreatment and impoverishment of Jews and others, as well as territorial threats against its neighbors, these contacts seemed all the more insulated from the human tragedy unfolding within Europe. Eager and cooperative letters, reports, telegrams, and memoranda did not number in the hundreds, but in the thousands of pages per month. While concentration camps, pauperization, and repression flourished in Nazi Germany, and while refugees filled ships and trains telling horrifying stories of torture and inhumanity, it was business as usual for eugenics. And again, what we're talking about there is Rockefeller Foundation of funding of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institutes well into the Nazi period. And what we're going to delve into now is the primary importance of the study of twins for eugenicists. And as we're going to see, this evolved directly into Mengele's work at Auschwitz. Turning once again to The War Against the Weak by Edwin Black. Hereditarians sought twins of all ages, not just children, for proper study. The family tree of a New England family of twins, including one pair 91 years of age, fascinated eugenicists. Geneticists excavated old journals to discover even earlier examples, such as a 17th century Russian woman who gave birth 27 times, each time producing twins, triplets, or quadruplets, yielding a total of 69 children. Race and twins quickly became an issue for American eugenicists. In a 1920 lecture series, Davenport raised the issue of racial difference in twin frequency, unquote, in the same geographic area. He pointed out that from 1896 to 1917 in Washington, D.C., the, quote, Negro rate of twins is 20% higher than the white race, unquote. For whites in the nation's capital, it was 1.82 pairs of twins per 100 births, while blacks had 2.27 per 100. At about the same time, Eugenical News, analyzing recent census data, claimed that twin births overall still occurred at a frequency of approximately 1% nationwide, but the percentage of multiple births among blacks was almost one-fifth greater than among whites. Parenthetically, I would ask, they were not thrilled about that. Blacks and also poor whites, quote, hillbillies, unquote, were early targets of American applied eugenics, sterilization, and other such tactics. Continuing. Davenport followed up such observations in his Jamaica race crossing study, which featured in-depth studies of three sets of twins. Diagnostic and physiological developments in twin studies from any sector of the medical sciences were of constant interest to eugenic readers. So Eugenical News regularly summarized articles from the general medical literature to feed eugenicists unending fascination with the topic. In 1922, when a state medical journal reported using stethoscopes to monitor a twin pregnancy, it was reported in Eugenical News. When a German clinical journal published a study of tumors in twins, this too was reported in Eugenical News. With each passing issue, Eugenical News dedicated more and more space to the topic. The list of such reports became long. By the early 1920s, articles on twins became increasingly instructive. One typical example explained how to more precisely verify the presence of identical twins using a capillary microscope. Journal of Heredity also made twins a frequent subject in its pages. For example, it published Paul Popenoe's article entitled Twins Reared Apart, unquote, and Hermann Müller's article The Determination of Twin Heredity and regularly reviewed books about twins. Every leading eugenic textbook included a section on twins. Popenoe's Applied Eugenics explained that identical twins, quote, start lives as halves of the same whole, unquote, but again quoting, became more unlike if they were brought up apart, unquote. Bauer, Fisher, and Lenz's Foundation of Human Heredity and Race Hygiene cited several studies, including those written by Popenoe in Journal of Heredity. The German eugenicists wrote, quote, of late years, the study of twins has been a favorite branch of genetic research, unquote, and thanked Galton for his, quote, flash of genius in, quote, recognizing this a long while ago, unquote. In a similar vein, most international eugenic and genetic conferences included presentations or exhibits on twins, their disparity or similarity, their susceptibility to tuberculosis, their likes and their dislikes. R.A. Fisher opened one of his lectures to the Second International Congress of Eugenics with the phrase, quote, the subject of the genesis of human twins has a special importance for eugenicists, unquote. The Third Congress offered an exhibit on mental disorders in twins, an exhibit illustrating fingerprint comparisons, a third juxtaposing identical and fraternal twins, and a fourth offering an array of 59 anthropomorphic photos. The quest for a superior race continued to intersect with the availability of twins. In the July-August 1935 edition of Eugenical News, Dr. Alfred Gordon published a lengthy article entitled The Problems of Heredity and Eugenics, unquote. His first sentence read, quote, regulation of reproduction of a superior race, eugenics, is fundamentally based on the principles of heredity, unquote. Gordon went on to explain, again quoting, The role of heredity finds its strongest corroboration in cases of psychoses in twins. He then gave an example of just two case studies of twins. Such enthusiastic coverage in the biological and eugenic media was prompted by a few months before by the extensive examination of just a single pair of twins undertaken at New York University's College of Dentistry, this to identify pathological detention. There were so few twins to study that surgeons in the eugenics community passed along their latest discoveries one by one to advance the field's common knowledge. Well, of course, that was obviously an inhibiting factor to researchers, but with the advent of the Nazi dictatorship, that changed. Skipping ahead in the war against the weak, speaking of the relative inaccessibility of twins for research, all that changed when Hitler came to power in 1933. Germany surged ahead in its study of twins. The German word for twins is Zwillinge. There were tens of thousands of twins in the Reich. In 1921 alone, 19,573 pairs were born, plus 231 sets of triplets. In 1925, 15,741 pairs of twins were born, as well as 161 sets of triplets. Twins were now increasingly sought to help combat hereditary diseases and conditions real and imagined. Verschuer's book, Twins and Tuberculosis, was published in 1933 and received a favorable review in Journal of Heredity. In 1934, a Norwegian physician working with Verschuer and Fischer published in a German anthropology journal his analysis of 116 pairs of identical twins and 127 pairs of fraternal twins for their inheritance of an ear characteristic known as Darwin's tubercle. But many more twins would be needed to accomplish the sweeping research envisioned by the architects of Hitler's master race. In early December of 1935, Otmar Freiherr von Verschuer told a correspondent for the Journal of the American Medical Association that eugenics had moved into a new phase. Once Mendelian principles of human heredity were established, the correspondent wrote, quote, "Further progress was achieved with the beginning of research on twins, by means of which it is possible to measure hereditary influence even though the hereditary processes themselves are complicated. Many of these researchers, however, as Freiherr von Verschuer recently pointed out, are of questionable value. What is absolutely needed is research on series of families and twins selected at random, examined under the same conditions, a fixed minimum of examinations being made in all cases," unquote. The article went on to cite Verschuer's view that meaningful research would require entire families from children to grandparents. In plain words, this meant gathering larger numbers of twins in one place for simultaneous investigation. Well, that took place indeed. Now, we're going to skip ahead in War Against the Weak. We are now into the World War II period, specifically in 1942. American eugenicist T.U.H. Ellinger was in Germany shortly after the decree to visit with Fischer at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Anthropology, Human Heredity, and Eugenics. In a Journal of Heredity essay on his visit, Ellinger flippantly reported to his colleagues, quote, "Twins have, of course, for a long time been a favorite material for the study of the relative importance of heredity and environment, of nature and nurture. It does, however, take a dictatorship to oblige some 10,000 pairs of twins, as well as triplets and even quadruplets, to report to a scientific institution at regular intervals for all kinds of recordings and tests." When twins did report to the Institute for Anthropology, Human Heredity, and Eugenics, they were often placed in small, specially constructed examination rooms, each lined with two-way mirrors and motion picture camera lenses camouflaged into the wallpaper. The staff proudly showed Ellinger all of these facilities. However, eugenicists at the Institute could only go so far with mere observations. Reich scientists needed more if they were to take up the next step in creating a super race resistant to disease and capable of transmitting the best traits. Autopsies were required to discover how specific organs and bodily processes reacted to various experiments. Verschuer needed more twins and the freedom to kill them. The highest ranks of the Hitler regime agreed, including Interior Minister Frick, who ran the concentration camps, and SS Chief Heinrich Himmler. Millions of dispensable human beings from all across Europe, Jews, gypsies, and other undesirables, were passing through Hitler's camps to be efficiently murdered. Among these millions, there were bound to be thousands of twins. Shortly after Verschuer took over for Fischer at the Institute for Anthropology, Human Heredity, and Eugenics at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, he proposed a Zweilingslager, or twins camp, within Auschwitz. He applied to the German Research Society, which between July and September of 1943 passed his application through the various steps needed for approval and funding. The grant covered a six-month period beginning in October of 1943 under contract number 0296/1595. The camp was approved and was bureaucratically filed under the keyword twins camp. At the end of May 1943, Mengele arrived in Auschwitz, where he took control of the ramps where Jews were brought in. Verschuer notified the German Research Society, quote, "My assistant, Dr. Josef Mengele, M.D. and Ph.D., joined me in this branch of the research. He is presently employed as Hauptsturmführer, or captain and camp physician, in the Auschwitz concentration camp. Anthropological testing of the most diverse racial groups in this concentration camp are being carried out with permission of the SS Reichsfuhrer Himmler. Nazi Germany had now carried eugenics further than any dared expect. The future of the master race that would thrive in Hitler's thousand-year Reich lay in twins. For this reason, there would now be a special class of victims at Auschwitz. There would be a special camp, special medical facilities, and special laboratories, all for the twins." Now, Mengele's experiments themselves are relatively well known. He did all sorts of things where he would inject them with substances, dyes to change the color of their eyes. He would perform unanesthetized operations on the twins, doing various things. Then the twins themselves both had to be killed at the same time so that they could be dissected and have their organs and bodies studied. And I'm not going to relate too much about the actual experiments, but it's worth noting that everything that Mengele did was inextricably tied with the research at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institutes, and those in turn had been heavily capitalized by the Rockefeller Foundation well into the Nazi period. Skipping down and resuming with the war against the weak. While evidence of mass murder in the trenches of Russia and the gas chambers of Poland was systematically destroyed, Mengele's murders with the twins were enshrined in the protocols of science. Mengele's ghastly files did not remain his private mania confined to Auschwitz. Every case was meticulously annotated, employing the best scientific method prisoner doctors could muster. Then the files were sent to Verschuer's offices at the Institute for Anthropology, Human Heredity, and Eugenics in Berlin-Dahlem for study. That again, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. Resuming. An adult prisoner chosen to help care for the youngest twins recounted, quote, "The moment a pair of twins arrived in the barracks, they were asked to complete a detailed questionnaire for the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute in Berlin. One of my duties as the twins' father, unquote, was to help them fill it out, especially the little ones who couldn't read or write. These forms contain dozens of detailed questions related to a child's background, health, and physical characteristics. They asked for the age, weight, and height of the children, their eye color, and the color of their hair. They were promptly mailed to Berlin." And then this Naizili is one of Mengele's assistants, N-Y-I-S-Z-L-I. Naizili, who had to fill out voluminous postmortem reports, recalled Mengele's warning, quote, "I want clean copy because these reports will be forwarded to the Institute of Biological, Racial, and Evolutionary Research at Berlin-Dahlem. Thus, I learned that the experiments performed here were checked by the highest medical authorities at one of the most famous scientific institutes in the world," unquote. The reports, countersigned by Mengele and sent to Berlin, were not just received and warehoused, they were carefully reviewed and discussed. A dialogue developed between Verschuer's Institute and Mengele. Another prisoner assistant recounted that Mengele, quote, "would receive questions about the twins from the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute in Berlin, and he would send them the answers," unquote. The volume of exchange was massive. So again, note that Mengele's work on the twins, like so many other aspects of the Nazi regime, were not aberrations, but rather grew out of some very important mainstream intellectual and, quote, scientific, unquote, trend. So when we see this account that maybe Mengele was continuing his research in Latin America and helped to produce twins in a Brazilian town, It should not come as all that much of a surprise. And indeed, in For the Record Program 606 and in For the Record Program 643, we examine information which will be annotated in the description for the Record 664, indicating that AIDS may very well have grown from boilerplate research that was done by the Nazis. There is an inherited genetic immunity to HIV infection that is only present in pure-blooded Northern Europeans. Oh, no other race but the white race has it, and it's only purebred Northern Europeans. We're going to end this discussion of Fun with Science Part 6 with a brief look at Dr. Aribert Heim. Now, there's been recent discussion of Dr. Heim, who allegedly died in 1992. He was a Nazi doctor who did experimentation on inmates at concentration camps, specifically at Mauthausen and Buchenwald. And there are indications that, who knows? But he allegedly escaped, or he somehow found his way out of custody, then escaped when German authorities were moving to rearrest him in 1962. He lived in Egypt, converted to Islam, changed his name, learned to speak fluent Arabic, and allegedly died in 1992. He's been a recent focal point of a number of articles. We're going to take a look now briefly to wrap things up at an AP story from April 29th of 2008 by David Rising, concentration camp doctor heads list of 10 of top 10 wanted Nazis. Noting this again, while in American custody, while there, witnesses, and talking about his work in the concentration camps, while there, this is about Aribert Heim, witnesses told investigators he worked closely with SS pharmacist Erich Vesicki on such gruesome experiments as injecting various solutions into Jewish prisoners' hearts to see which killed them the fastest. But while Vesicki was brought to trial by an American military tribunal in 1946 and sentenced to death, along with other camp medical personnel and commanders, Heim, who was a POW in American custody, was not among them. Heim's file in the Berlin Document Center, the then U.S.-run depot for Nazi-era papers, was apparently altered to obliterate any mention of Mauthausen, according to his 1979 German indictment obtained by the AP. Instead, for the period he was known to be at the concentration camp, he was listed as having a different SS assignment. This, quote, cannot be correct, unquote, the indictment says. Again, quoting, it is possible that through data manipulation, the short assignment at the same time to the concentration camp was concealed, unquote. There was no indication who might have been responsible. The one thing that I'm going to, one more thing I'm going to include in this program, and that concerns the experimentation with mutagens in the Nazi concentration camps. We excerpted an American eugenicist U.H. Ellinger's letter after examining the Nazi eugenics programs and recalling that thalidomide was apparently developed by the Nazis and tested in concentration camps. One can only wonder if this added to their inventory. Quoting Ellinger, quote, quite a few of them, the Nazi eugenicists, were busy treating or rather mistreating the sex cells of animals and plants in order to produce new varieties. I was introduced to all kinds of extraordinary creatures produced in that way, mice without toes or with corkscrew tails, flies that violated the very definition of a fly by having four wings instead of two, funny-looking moths, and strange plants. Radiation, especially with X-rays, is the principal means of producing such new kinds, or rather monsters, of animals and plants. Unquote. Might thalidomide also have been used? It's what I call food for thought and grounds for further research. Again, listeners should use the written description to this program at spitfirelist.com to flesh out their understandings and use the other materials available, because we are out of time. This concludes for side two of For the Record program number 664, Fun with Science, part six, being recorded on February 22nd of the year 2009. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.